ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Corbin Middlemass alongside Stuart Clark. This is Grandstand at Lunch, and I'm very pleased to say our feature guest during the lunch break with England 6 for 336 is the venue's New South Wales chair and a Cricket New South Wales board member, one of the finest sports administrators going around in this country. David Gallop joins us. David, first of all, thanks for your time on ABC Sport.
Thanks very much for having me on, Corbs.
How do you find Test Week as with your dual roles, obviously overseeing the ground here at the SCG and also your Cricket New South Wales responsibilities? Is it a busy week for you?
It is a busy week. Obviously try to get over to the Cricket New South Wales room later in the day, do the main function here, and we've had a great couple of days so far. You know, big build up to this Test match around the pitch and what it might be like. A lot of talk about what happened in Melbourne. You know, I think Todd Greenberg probably ordered a steak well done, and he ended up with a rare steak. So I think we've come up with, you know, medium rare on the first morning and then moving to medium today.
Yeah. You joke about it tongue in cheek and everything else, but how much input does the organisation have into what Adam Lewis is tasked with doing as the curator here?
I'd have to say in the last week or so, you know, we have taken a pretty acute look at it. I came out here on New Year's Day, had a chat to Adam. You know, he knows what he's doing, but, you know, the spotlight was on it, and another two-day test wouldn't have been good for us or Cricket Australia or cricket fans. So, you know, pleased to say that things are tracking towards a good test match out here this year.
You mentioned Adam looking at him before the game. He was nervous about what he was going to produce, but saw him this morning. He's a lot more comfortable now. And as you alluded to, I think the wicket, we expect it to be good for batting, but then break up towards the end of the match, because that's what good test cricket's about.
Yeah, he definitely, you know, he wants to be regarded as having produced a good test match wicket. And that means not focusing too much on what happened at Melbourne. He said to me on New Year's Day, when I was out there with him, he said, you know, I still want to produce a match where the ball does a bit early and then settles down, and then towards the end of the 4 or 5 days, again, makes another change and starts to maybe crumble a bit. So it is an art, not a science, and, you know, it can go wrong quite easily. So I think he was under the pump a bit.
We talk all the time about the Adelaide Oval, and we love visiting there and the blend of the old and the new, and that they've still got the hill and the old scoreboard. What you guys have here is clearly the beautiful old green roof grandstands, and it's awesome to be able to see them still thriving and so well populated in 2026. It is an interesting blend at the SCG at the moment, where you've got the beautiful stand in which we sit, obviously at the Paddington end of the ground, but there are a couple of older stands now that are sort of all of a sudden nearly half a century old. What's next for the redevelopment of this ground as we see these beautiful old venues often, you know, changing and updating and making sure that they're still able to be world-class in this day and age?
Yeah, I mean, this place has got great charm, and you would never touch the traditional stands, but we do have a master plan that would see replacement of the O'Reilly and the Churchill Brongle at some stage. Obviously, those would be big costs. The New South Wales government, we're a network of venues, so we have 6 venues under our control. We're building one at Penrith. We've got if you like, hands out for improvements at Newcastle, Wollongong, and obviously here. So, you know, it's not an easy thing for the government to juggle, but we want to make sure that when the time does come, we've got a good master plan and a good idea for what this place can become. There's no doubt those stands do need upgrading, and that will happen one day, but we can't say it's sort of straight away.
With your members at the SCG, how important is the Test match, this New Year's Test match? Because if you only got to walk downstairs and just see the country people that come to this Test match, it's a really big occasion, and people set their calendars yearly around being at this Test match and then making it the New Year's Test match, along with the McGrath stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think having this Test match in this week is really important. It's really important to our members. It's become a great tradition for them, whether they live in Sydney or other places. You know, I grew up in Canberra. I started coming here over 50 years ago. to the SCG Test match, to rugby league, obviously. And there's something special about the place. So having this test match for our members in this week is critically important. And we think it's the right slot in the calendar too.
David Gallop, one of the country's leading sports administrators and current chair of Venues New South Wales, which has the SCG under its control with us on Grandstand at Lunch on ABC Sport. I'm reliably told the museum, obviously, which you see really as soon as you walk in here, is what, getting expanded or there's a new part of it being built. Can you bring us up to date with what's going on there?
We've got a really exciting plan to build a new museum out on Driver Avenue. We're currently in a fundraising phase for that, but it would be a museum not just for cricket, but for all the sport that's been played here over the, 100 years. That includes the football codes. It includes things as kind of unique as Muhammad Ali fighting. There was tennis here, there was cycling here, there was athletics here. So we've sent some of our people on global tours where they've taken in the best of sporting museums around the world, and we think we can build something really special out on Driver Avenue for the public and for the members. We're really hopeful that that'll get up and running over the next couple of years.
We had one of your finest employees, Phil Heads, on with us on Summer Grandstand on the weekend, and we did a little trip down memory lane and history tour of the SCG, and we came across the paranormal activity sightings that the security guards have reported about the ladies stand and the members pavilion at night. Have you ever witnessed anything like that late at night here at the SCG?
No, I haven't, but there's certainly a lot of great, a lot of great stories about things that have happened in those stands. I always remember the story of the Bulldogs losing a rugby league game here once, and Bullfrog Moore, legendary administrator at the Bulldogs, went back to Canterbury Leagues Club only to get a phone call from the ground to say he'd left his 10-year-old daughter in the ladies' stand. Lynn Anderson, who went on to be involved heavily at the Bulldogs and in Australian sport, but she was sitting in the dark waiting for Bullfrog to pick her up. He'd already gone back to Belmore.
Corbin Middlemass and Stuart Clark with David Gallop on ABC Sport. We want to talk a little bit about you as well. And Saf, you informed me that David, very handy cricketer in his days with UNSW.
Yeah, David was a nasty fast bowler back in the day, but then work got in the way. Talk a little bit about your career, because I know probably more than most, but you played first grade cricket for Union New South Wales, and yet your son played for East as well, so the cricket's run in your family, and I'm pretty sure your father's a life member of Canberra cricket as well, so it's been part of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad was heavily involved in ACT cricket. I think he was the president of the association for 20 years. He captained the ACT in cricket before that. So cricket's always been a big part of our life. I came up to Sydney and played 10 years or so at Uni in New South Wales, which was a fantastic part of my life. The thing about that cricket club was a lot of guys from country places came in to Sydney to go to university and ended up playing cricket at that club. So it had a unique culture. It's kind of still got it. Fantastic players like Jeff Lawson, who really has still puts hours into that cricket club, years after he stopped playing. And I can remember him playing test match cricket at the SCG and then turning up to grade training just to help the young guys out. So that kind of dedication. But yeah, it was a big part of my life, and not that I was particularly good at it. I got to kind of bowl uphill into the wind, and Henry got to get the new ball downwind. But it was a fantastic part of my life, and great friendships, which is what cricket gives you.
I read that you played in the Kent League over in the UK. A lot of cricket fans, the only thing they'll know about Kent is that there used to be a tree on the first class venue, and obviously that the cricket was played around it. Take us back to, the late 80s and your trip there. What did you learn playing over there?
Well, the great thing about that year was it was 89, so it was an Ashes year. Henry was in the team. And so I got to go to the test matches, got to play cricket at a place called Bickley Park, which was a beautiful cricket ground. The standard of the cricket probably wasn't of the highest order. It certainly wasn't near first grade or second grade standard, which Jim Jungle Robson, a legend of Sydney cricket, said to me, go somewhere where you're going to do well, because then they'll like you and you'll have a good time. And he was right. I think I took 50 wickets for the season. We won the league, and we had, you know, as you can imagine with that kind of thing, we had a lot of fun going around the country watching the Aussies win in Ashes that they weren't expected to win. I always say to Steve Waugh, I went home early the day he got the last ball century here, because I said to my mates, he won't make 100 today. But I was at Headingley when he and Mark Taylor made their first test century, so maybe that's some compensation for not having faith in him that day.
David Gallop with us on Grandstand at Lunch on ABC Sport. I wanted to set up your cricketing background because obviously you're heavily involved in cricket now on the Cricket New South Wales board, as well as being the chair of Venues New South Wales. But many of our audience will still associate you with obviously the long time that you spent running the NRL and then obviously moving on to one of our other major sports in the country as the CEO of the FFA. I guess some similarities and differences across the two codes themselves, rugby league and football, and what you found in your experiences there, spending what almost a decade at each place.
Yeah, I mean, rugby league was a fantastic part of my life. I think I worked in the building or buildings for 17 years, 10 as the CEO. After Super League, which kind of came along and was a big jolt to the game, and my period was about, okay, we've got to get rugby league back, use the commercial opportunity that I think Super League created. So I was hell-bent on running an even competition. You know, I knew that that was the way that fans would get engaged with the game, and I think we did that. You know, we did some great stuff around community engagement, and I think we dealt with the hard issues appropriately as well. So I'm sort of known for the salary cap breaches that happened at the Bulldogs and the Melbourne Storm. And, you know, I think when those moments come along, you've got to deal with them appropriately as well. And I think we did that.
Was that was that the biggest challenge you had in your time as a sports administrator, particularly the Melbourne Storm episode, with, you know, stripping of premierships and I guess the fallout and of that?
Yeah, it was a big issue. But we had incontrovertible evidence, you know, that they were hundreds of thousands of dollars over the cap. So in that respect, there wasn't much choice what we had to do, but it was very emotional for them, for us. Same as the Bulldogs one in 2002 when I'd only really just started in the job, but we had to do it. So to that extent, it wasn't a 50-50 call. It was a call that had to be made.
I was having a laugh. I spent some time working in rugby league too. There's a couple of sleepless nights when you work in rugby league, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, rugby league's a sort of 24-hour a day media feast, and you need to be ready for that. You've got to be ready for the unexpected, but you've also got to trust the strategies that you've got as the bedrocks, like running an even competition, getting community engagement. You know that old cliche: you get the team into the community, and the community gets into the team. I always believed in that, and I think we did some great community stuff. We created membership around rugby league clubs, which was the old season ticket thing, but a deeper engagement for fans with their club. And I'm really proud now when I look at the fact that there are hundreds of thousands of people who become members of a rugby league club every season. I think that was a big part of getting people out in their merchandise, coming to games and really engaging with the game.
You moved to the FFA after that. People don't appreciate, in Australia, I believe, just the enormity of what football is in the world, because we're very insulated with rugby league or AFL here. But once you move to the rest of the world, football's the dominant sport, and fans are they're fanatical, for want of a better term.
Yeah, I mean, I've got optimism for football in this country. I think it's gone through a pretty flat period in the last few years. You know, investment in the A-League is tough. Your best players are going to go out of the country to play, etc. But you're right, when I went into that sport, you know, the opportunity to build the Matildas up from games where we had to lock gates because we couldn't afford to open them and we knew no fans would come, to building it up so that, you know, I always remember a day when I saw a kid at Newcastle, he crossed Cahill off his shirt and written Kerr in Texter. And I thought, oh, we're onto something here. We can do something with this female part of the game. And Sam was a big part of leading that. But yeah, the global sort of aspect of it and the politics of being around Sepp Blatter and these guys, it was a bit of an eye-opener, but it was certainly fantastic. I got to go to World Cups, and I hope they can sort out the domestic league here at some point.
Yeah. What, have you got any views on that, as to what they can do to try and give it a little bit of a facelift?
I mean, I would love to see all football. So you can be a Liverpool fan, you can be a Real Madrid fan, you can be a Sydney FC fan, and you go to one platform and you can watch football. I think that there was a period there where Fox Sports had the EPL and the A-League, and I reckon that's when it was humming for people, because they loved the game of football and they could get their European fix but also watch their Sydney or Australian team.
David Gallop with us on Grandstand at Lunch, Corbin Middlemass and Stuart Clark during the lunch break on day two here on Grandstand Cricket on ABC Sport. It feels like a little bit of a scary time for sports. And as someone that's been a sports administrator for many years, you know, often that the big codes have relied on, you know, mega bucks when it comes to TV deals. And we look at certainly our traditional media outlets and we think, is the same sort of pot of gold going to be there the next time around? The way audiences are engaging with sport is different. Where's your level of optimism, I guess, for sport in this country? And I guess are there a couple of sports in particular that you feel like are on a winner, and perhaps some others that should be nervous about the future?
Yeah, I definitely think, Clarkey knows this as well, because we're deep in looking at the privatisation of the BBL, and you turn it on last night, the Heat, the Stars and the Renegades at the MCG, nearly 70,000 people. T20 cricket's become phenomenally successful. We know the influence of the Indians and the IPL. So cricket's at a bit of a crossroads, probably why having a two-day test match really kind of heightens people's worry about the game going forward. Then you also look at, okay, well, there was only 2 days, but the place was packed out on those 2 days. So you can be optimistic that people love test match cricket. Cricket still, you know, cricket's got challenges. It takes a long time to play. So getting kids to commit on a Saturday morning or a Saturday afternoon when they could be playing 40 minutes of basketball is a challenge, I think. For the football codes, there are challenges around managing concussion appropriately. There's some scary stuff there when you see fantastic footballers in their 50s and 60s now struggling. That's a worry for the when I was in football, I used to call them the collision sports, which was a sort of a gentle reminder to people that football, apart from heading the ball, was a safer option if you're a parent. There are challenges, but also I think on the optimistic side, live events are more important, whether they're sport or entertainment. We manage the concert program in venues in New South Wales. In November, we had AC/DC, Oasis, Lady Gaga. We've got Ed Sheeran coming up. So people love getting out to live events. There's a thing where sport is unscripted drama. And so you can be optimistic that people are going to come to live events.
I can assure you they are going to live events too. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned that I'm a couple of free tickets when they never go far. A bit more fun. I'm going to give you some fun stuff. Okay. Would you have played a spinner on this wicket?
Oh, well, I listened to Corb and Ed actually when I was having a bit of a trot along the beach track this morning. It does seem a bit weird to go into an SCG. I think the first test match at the SCG since 1888 that we haven't played a specialist spinner. I read another stat that's interesting though, which is Scott Boland is now the most accurate seamer. Sorry about this, Clarkey. Most accurate seamer in the history of Test cricket. So is that fulfilling a role that an off spinner used to fill, which was just to block up an end, make it tight, and then have your wicket taking guys on? Scott gets plenty of wickets as well. But, you know, maybe the way Smithy and George Bailey and of course Pat Cummins when he's in the team, Ronnie McDonald, maybe this is the way they think about it. Fast bowlers are definitely fitter and able to play days and days of cricket more than they ever were. I mean, these guys are phenomenal. Look at Mitch Stark this summer. He's just charged in over five tests, never looked like being hurt. I said to him the other day, it's something you saw, and he goes, not really. And it's incredible. You know, they're so well-trained, got beautiful mechanics, and, you know, that's all against spinners. But, you know, I think we'd all say, you know, if Gaz had been fit, he probably would have played.
Yeah, he certainly would have. Something different again. How lucrative are the Barmy Army being in Sydney and for venues New South Wales?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great part of Test cricket, isn't it? The Barmy Army. We got plenty of MCC and ECB people here as VIPs. I actually said to one of them, that, don't worry, we're coming for the best seats in 2027. We want some reciprocity. The Richies today, I think they're disbanding formally, but I'm sure there'll always be people here who come dressed as Richie. So there's lots of sort of, because of the length of Test cricket, you know, people can really get into it, whether it's singing Jerusalem or dressing up as a Richie. All that stuff's in pretty good shape, I reckon.
And how do you go with this guy, Stuart Clark, around the board table?
No, he's been excellent, actually.
That's not what I wanted to hear.
Yeah. No, smarter than your average bear, I say. And he's he adds a lot of value because, you know, playing 30 test matches and having his knowledge of grassroots sport, that's the kind of stuff that's pretty useful around the Cricket New South Wales table when we're discussing everything from grassroots to high performance.
As are your insights always. We really appreciate your time on ABC Sport, David, and all the very best in your dual roles going forward.
Yeah, good on you, Corb. Thanks. I'll be listening to you and Teddy. See what your wrap-up is tonight.